stood above the glassy waters of the Tyne, there's an archway above our head which looks very much like an artificial rainbow. There's a flex in the floor as we bounce on the Millennium Bridge.
Study construction.
We're kind of in between bars right now. We've just left Six and the speaker's dinner for the Thinking Digital Conference 2013. If you're on the hashtag #TDC13, you'll probably catch up with all the conversation and all the content that I hope to produce while I'm here. We're on the way to the Malmaison, and my drinking buddy for tonight is...
Graham Hughes from Liverpool, England.
Graham, we're travelling a short distance right now. Yeah. Can you feel a segue coming? it's only a matter of a couple of hundred yards. Not that kind of segue, he says, pretending to ride a two-wheeled randomness. Remind me to tell you about a segue story in a minute in New Zealand.
Okay.
Now, you've done some travelling in your time. I class myself proudly as a traveller, having spent 10 years doing 50-something countries. How many countries did you do in 4 years, and how did you do it?
I went to 201 countries, all 193 members of the United Nations, and then other random places like Kosovo and Western Sahara and Palestine that don't have a seat, what kind of nations, to be the first person in the world ever to go to every country that exists without flying, all on public transport, all on scheduled ground transport, buses, trains, taxis, bush taxis, you know, coaches, cargo ships, sailboats, whatever I could get myself onto. And did it on a budget, bugger all, and did it alone.
Are you scared of flying?
No. Far from it. Given the choice, I'd probably prefer to fly. But I was acutely aware of my carbon footprint on doing this. It would be a bit out of order to turn up at somewhere like Tuvalu, which is critically endangered. It's like, you know, you look at the critically endangered animal list. You could look at the critically endangered nation list, and the Maldives is obviously up there, and a lot of people know about that. But Tuvalu, it's this atoll of 9 countries in just north of Fiji in the Pacific Ocean, and it's going underwater. It gets flooded now every year when the tides go really high in the King Tide in the spring. And essentially, you're flooding an entire nation with salt water, so it doesn't just flood everything for a few days and annoy everyone. It leaves salt in the soil so you can't grow any vegetables, and it drowns the pigs and any other livestock that they have. It's pretty bad.
4 years is an awful lot of adventure to squeeze into one head. How many times do you think you feared for your life?
Never because of sort of criminality or because of people looking at me evilly or anything like that. That didn't come into it. A lot of the people, all the people I met, were very helpful and really wanted to help me out. You know, they saw someone in distress or traveller who's a bit lost, or, you know, somewhere needed somewhere to sleep for the night. And a lot of people stood up to the mantle and really helped me out. And what this journey has done is really reaffirmed my faith in humanity in many ways. Having said that, there were times when it was a bit dicey. There was a time when I took a wooden pirogue, a little sort of wooden canoe, fishing boat from the country of Senegal in West Africa over to the Cape Verde Islands. It took 4 days, and that was very, very dicey. And the other time was when I was caught in Congo by the local police, who didn't like the look of me, I don't know why, and threw me in a jail cell for 6 days, which wasn't very pleasant. But I got out, and now I've got an interesting story to tell the grandchildren.
Were you sporting a Lemmy moustache then?
No.
Because I would have arrested you.
No, normally I just have silly moustaches in Movember. The reason why I've got a silly moustache at the moment is because last week I went to a fancy dress party and it was a motorcycle theme. So this is a hangover from a party I was at last week.
Speaking of hangovers, was there any time when you were away that you got a little bit too overindulgent in the local
stuff? Oh, yes, far too many. One of the most notable times was I was in Mauritius back in October 2009, and I decided to take part in the Drink Your Way Around the World competition. 20 beers from different countries. So you had to drink a Sol from Mexico, you had to drink a Guinness from Ireland, etc. And I asked them how long normally people do to take to do this, and they said, oh, about 6 weeks. I said, has anyone done it in one night? And they said, no. And I said, okay, give me a Guinness, and started on that journey. And remarkably enough, not only did I finish all 20 beers, I got back to my hotel that I was staying at, the little B&B I was staying at that night, and I managed to get up the next day to get on the boat to head off to Madagascar. So I was doing quite well. The other times, yeah, I've been wrecked a few times. I got drunk with the Prime Minister of Tuvalu and a bunch of transvestites, which was quite fun. I also had a few incidents where I got so drunk that I ended up sleeping on the street, which wasn't so bad somewhere like Brisbane, but in somewhere like, I don't know, Dubai, where you can be arrested for just being drunk, I got away with it by the skin of my teeth, and I wouldn't recommend it to anyone. But I do have a remarkable sense of direction, and even if I'm very drunk, nine times out of ten, I'll find the right way home. Although once in Morocco many years ago, I did wake up in the wrong hotel room, only to find out that I was not only in the wrong hotel room, I was actually in the wrong hotel.
That's pretty misdirected.
It's the right number.
So, tell me, do you remember crying very often as you travelled?
No, the only time I burst into tears was when I was talking about earlier about getting the rest in Congo. The first day I was there, I wasn't really maltreated. I was allowed to use the internet. I was chatting away to my girlfriend at the time, and everything seemed all right. And then suddenly all these policemen came in and they took all my clothes off except for my trousers, and they took the glasses off my face and just threw me in this cell. I was just flabbergasted. I just didn't know what to do, and I really did. Yeah, I did sob. I've got to say that one time, I kind of just went, I don't want to do this anymore. But then after I got out of jail, my dad was interviewed by the local paper, and they said, you know, this is the second time he's been arrested in Africa, and you know, this is quite serious. Do you think he's going to give up his journey now? And this is, you know, at the time I've been to 110 countries, and my dad said, don't be absurd, my son's no quitter. And because my dad had said it, I just had to keep going, you know. Do you want to let him down?
Bit of pressure. the max. So where were the most amazing people you met?
Oh god, everywhere. Most amazing people, the most fascinating people, I suppose, would have to be in Papua New Guinea in the South Pacific. Just amazing culturally, you know, the food they eat and the social network that they have there, the tribal links and everything. It's really fascinating stuff. The most beautiful people I met were in Iran, which is remarkable. When you think of Iran, you always think of the sort of tyrannical government that they unfortunately have, but the people there were just remarkably friendly and sweet and kind natured. I met a guy who had come from Belgium, and he'd been travelling around Iran for a month, and he hadn't stayed in the hotel for one night. Every day someone would come up to him, offered him somewhere to eat for the night and somewhere to stay for the night, just in their homes, meet their family and all this. My own personal story of this is I was on a overnight bus from Shiraz to Khorramshahr, which is on the Shatt al-Arab waterway. I was going to take a ferry from there over to Kuwait, and there was an old Persian grandmother sitting in front of me, and she was yatting away on a phone in the local language, and she turned around to me and smiled and waved, and she gave me her phone. So I sort of put the phone to my ear and I say hello, and this guy on the other end, beautiful English, he says, hello, my name is Saeed Hussein and you're sitting behind my grandmother, and she's called me because she's concerned about you. And I said, well, why is she concerned? He said, well, because she says the bus gets in very early tomorrow morning at maybe 5 o'clock, and she's concerned that you will have nowhere to go and you will have no breakfast. So she wants to take you home with her so she can make you breakfast. Would this be acceptable? I was just like, yes, absolutely, please take me. So, yeah, and again, you know, from South America, Caribbean, North America, all around Europe, I mean, Africa, where people have so little, but they give so much, you know, what little they have, they're willing to share with you. I've been, this whole journey really has, like I said, reaffirmed my faith in humanity. It's made the world seem a much friendlier place than I thought it was before I started.
Was there ever a point that you thought, that's it, I don't need to travel anymore, I've found home?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm from Liverpool and I'm a very proud Liverpudlian, and I love my home city, and I don't feel like anywhere else in the world will ever feel like home feels like home for me. Having said that, anywhere I lay my hat for the night is home for me, and I love travelling. I'm never going to stop, and although I couldn't ever see myself staying in one place and staying in Liverpool for the rest of my life and never going anywhere, I guess Liverpool's always going to be that place that I always return to.
One thing I kind of settled down with was the kind of realisation that you know, I've probably, what, have I done a quarter of the countries you've done? Which feels like an awful lot to me, but it now seems to pale in comparison in a way, was when I came back, I kind of realised that everywhere seemed to be very similar because of the people that populate that space.
Yes, I will absolutely agree with that 100%. Most people in the world are very similar to you and me. They want the same thing. They want to be treated fairly. They want to feel like they're not having injustice committed against them. People don't necessarily need to be rich or famous. They just need to be happy. And happiness comes from having a family around you, having friends, having a network of support. And it doesn't matter if you grow up in a little village in Congo or you grow up in the city of London. That those things still hold true. And I wonder how many celebrities and people have to die for us to realise that just being wealthy and being this celebrity thing that everyone's so obsessed with at the moment doesn't necessarily make people happy. We see so many people who are desperately, desperately unhappy because they don't know who their friends are. They're a millionaire. Their friends aren't necessarily people who actually like them. They might just be people who just want their money, you know, just hangers on. So, yeah, I agree. I found people very remarkably similar. And even in terms of things like what they watch on TV and the fact that everyone's got mobile phones and they've got a Twitter account and Facebook. You know, you're going around China where Facebook is illegal. Everyone's asking you for your Facebook account. Same in Iran. You go to Turkey where YouTube is, well, used to be illegal, and, you know, people are watching YouTube. So there is this thing now where you can look around the world and say, we're not that different. We're all in this together. We're all on this little tiny rock in the middle of a vast galaxy of pretty much nothing out there as far as we know so far. And even if there is something out there, it's so far away that we're never going to get to it. We need to start looking after this place for the sake of all of us.